It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Yield Season 2, Episode 3, Discord is over. But here on Post Show Recaps, we are just getting started. My name is Grace, but of course, I'm not alone. Here, I've ambushed his Duffy Dome to extend an offer, and if he doesn't agree, I'm going to send my lawyers after him. It's my co-host, Stan. Stan, how you doing?
I love that intro. How very apropos, given everything that we're going to talk about for this week. This is a cross promotion. You and I are both getting over, Grace, because that's I'd right. like to think we both trust one another. So I don't think any of us are going to swerve the other. Ah, so many wrestling terms.
That's right. Another episode of Heels has arrived on Stars this past Friday. We're here to cover it. I think that we're in the main post-show recaps feed. Well, we obviously are in the main post-show recaps feed. I believe we're also maybe in the binge show. It's not really a binge show, but we put a lot of stuff that's on streaming in our binge show feed, so you can check it out. We don't have dedicated Heels feed at the moment, but perhaps in the future as we get more over, as Stan was saying. But I'm excited to dive into episode 3 with you, Stan. Stan, overall, before we dive into the recap, what'd you think?
Relatively lighter episode as well, kind of like episode 2 from last week, save for that one scene towards the end where you see zombie Tom Spade invading Ace Spade's nightmare. I just have to say it. Like, early on, can the show please stop triggering my anxiety with all the graphic images of Tom and his death and all that? Please. Is that too much to ask?
Yeah, I do feel like, to an extent, I don't know whether this is true or not, but it feels like this, that the show found some stuff, especially from season one. I think they really like the show being pretty dark in terms of tone. And there's one thing I want to get into in a bit. There's a scene with Ace and the scene with Ace and Jack, sorry, that I want to get into, that I think there's one little thing that's missing sometimes from the show. I do think they go a little dark. I mean, we'll talk about the opening of the show, but basically we find out that like Jack was subject to physical abuse by his mm-hmm. his mom. Certainly a thing that like, you know, the show is, it's so weird. The show is supposed to be set in the modern times, but also sometimes feels like, you know, it could be, you know, this is territory wrestling from the 70s. So Jack wouldn't be that, like, it feels like by the time this is happening, it probably shouldn't be happening, but maybe I have my timeline off in terms of sort of that like corporal punishment thing being more acceptable or less acceptable in society. But I feel like this is a thing that they've sort of, they introduced in this episode, that I don't even really think we got hints of it before, that I don't know. It just feels like they're kind of like just like keep tacking on like the trauma stuff instead of trying to figure out how to sort of, I feel like, make the stuff that they have on the table already work. I don't know if that resonates with you at all, Stan, but that's how I was feeling with the intro. And then certainly the scene later when we get Jack's nightmare.
Yeah, I actually feel like they made Carol a darker character in season two. Whereas in season one, I get that she would only be triggered whenever Tom's suicide would be brought up. But other right. than that, she wasn't. She was relatively harmless. Whereas in season two, she kind of comes across as a monster, if I'm going to be honest with you. But I don't know about how progressive America has been with regard to corporal punishment in the last three decades. Because growing up here in the Philippines, I actually grew up thinking corporal punishment was normal in the 90s.
Okay.
So I was kind of subject to it still growing up, but my parents kind of loosened up as I got older. So seeing that scene was sort of relatable, but knowing what I know now, it also came across as very dark and like that shouldn't really be the norm anymore, nor should it have been ever.
Yeah, so I mean, I get, so Stephen Amell is like pretty much 10 years older than me. Yeah, I don't know. It does feel like this was not in my parents' wheel, and it wasn't complete, like, spanking maybe, but quite as bad as he gets it. I don't know. But anyway, I guess it's not banned. I'm a Canadian again, so I'm only going to speak to Canada. Banned in Canada in 2004. So, you know, that presumes that it was even maybe still around at that time. Yeah. But I think overall, I do think that, you know, this is sort of, for me, a very like unexpected drama. I think this is a there are parts of this that I feel like are such a dream for me as a wrestling fan, because I remember when The Wrestler came out, also an incredibly dark film. Yep. And we referenced it in our I think it's the episode one coverage. Yes. That we did. There's a bit of an homage maybe to The Wrestler. That was an incredibly dark film, but also it was like kind of taking wrestling seriously. And this is a pretty good drama for the most part. So I did enjoy this episode for the most part, even if I would agree with you that, you know, episode one is the big sort of flashback. How do we get here? A thing that yeah. we probably should have gotten in season one. I thought episode two was really strong. This may be a little bit of a step down, but I thought still good.
Yeah, I wouldn't say yeah. it was a letdown. I actually thought it pushed some main plot points forward, which I'm super thrilled to get into, because it really sets up a lot of the big tension points for season two.
Yeah. All right, well, let's jump into it. So I don't know how much we need to go into this, but we do get the flashback of Jack stealing the piece of cake, and he is going to get punished by his mom. And so flash forward later, and he goes to her house to grab his phone kind of blames her that like Ace is gone, and that she encouraged him to a degree, and that if they end up like killing each other, it's her fault.
Yeah, I see it as Jack refusing to acknowledge his role in all of the trauma and his refusal to deal with this trauma in the best way possible. So he chooses to blame his mom instead. And I think that a lot of us kind of do process our traumas that way as well, especially when we don't have the proper tools to actually manage all of these things, right? And I do believe he's sort of justified, because in a way his mom did kind of enable some of these things, especially with how she was like, yes, Ace, go, get the hell out of here. Yeah. Neither of them really have the proper tools to like deal with everything they've gone through. So they're all still very clearly wounded, and now they're taking it out on one another.
Yeah. So we're going to cut to Ace. He is saved by these two women who happen to be hiking early, or actually rappelling early in the morning. and they're going to save him. This is certainly did not turn out to be quite as dire as I thought it was going to be. His ankle is sprained, maybe. As we learn, a sprain could be worse than a break. But for the most part, Ace comes out of this. I mean, I think the worst thing that happens to him maybe is going to be the bill that he's going to get for how he treats the hotel room.
Oh, I thought the worst he was going to get was him almost actually falling to his death during the daytime.
Because
the idiot tried to stand on his own two feet without remembering he was injured.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's going to, there's this, so a little bit later, we're going to get this scene with them where he is going to completely misread these women. Did you get this, that they are a couple and they just like, it's like, you idiot, or are they just like friends and it's like, you're an idiot, we don't want to, like, you're a bum who fell off a cliff hiking. Like, what's your read on this? Was there like any subtle, for me, I certainly wondered whether, like, I thought they were going to say it and they didn't say it. So it's like, oh, maybe I read it wrong.
I was wondering if there was anything coded in the way that they were dressed and in the way that they were presented as characters, right? Like physically. One of the women certainly seemed to have a less feminine hairstyle and a less feminine presentation. I think based on her presentation, I kind of thought it was implied that they were a couple, but I didn't want to read too much into it until Ace put his own foot in his mouth, if you know what I mean.
No, yeah, 100%. And they just didn't say it, which, I don't know, could just be the show not wanting, like, you know, it's there if you want to see it and not there if you don't. So, I don't know. What do you make of Rooster shows back up? He's buying is it a mattress for his father?
No, a new bed.
A new bed, a whole new bed, making that dystopian money. What'd you think of Rooster showing back up in the show?
I thought it was funny that he makes like WWE level money now that he's the champion of dystopia. So it kind of, I guess, implies that Charlie Gulley and dystopia pay their wrestlers like they're Tony Khan, I guess. So good for them. But it's also weird because Dystopia presents itself as like a knockoff TNA. So I'm not sure how much money DeAndre is actually making here. And with his dad mentioning Rocky Johnson, it proves that, there's more WWE lore that exists in their universe.
Yeah, I thought that was fun. It's a fun shout out for a guy like Rooster's dad's age to have been a fan of Rocky Johnson. I think makes a lot of sense. That's fun. It's a fun nod. The money thing doesn't make any sense to me. I think these are both I can't tell the dome, the Duffy Dome. I don't know. I can't tell what the number is sold out, but then they said they did like 10,000 people at the state fair. So I can't tell. Mm-hmm. I cannot tell the size of what both DWF and Dystopian Wrestling League Florida Dystopian Wrestling?
Florida Wrestling Dystopia, FWD.
FWD. I cannot tell how big they are supposed to be.
Later in the episode, Jack shows up with a huge wad of cash, right, to hand off to Ace. So maybe on a very good day, they actually make a boatload of money. But I wouldn't know. I mean, just to backtrack here, back to Rooster, I kind of appreciate how they painted the duality of man here. They start off by giving you something to relate to with regard to Rooster, like him being an actual son who cares for his dad, very generous, very willing to give back. Yeah. And then later on, as he gets back into the same space as Charlie Gulley, he becomes this cunning, cutthroat person who wants to get back at Jack.
So, who knows, other than Ace, does anybody else know that Rooster was going to lose the title literally a week after he won it? Because I feel like that, I thought maybe they would hint at that a little bit at some point in this episode, because Rooster, later we'll see, he's like one of the guys who Charlie is bringing in as like, you know, backup. But he was ready to sort of like, you know, have him drop the belt a week after he wins it. I'm wondering if there's the potential that, I don't know, should we put up, a little wager on this? Does Rooster end up back in Duffy by the end of the season? Does he get spurned by Charlie Gulley?
Yeah, I have a feeling that this is Rooster's Nate the Great arc, if you get the Ted Lasso reference.
Yeah.
You know, if you remember Ted Lasso, Nate the Great turned heel as well and joined Nathan's club and then eventually gets back into the good graces of Rebecca and Ted and Richmond.
Yeah. I wanted to give a quick shout out to Charlie Gulley, who I believe, Michael Malley, wrote the first two episodes of the season.
Yes, he did.
Which I didn't realize. This one by Victor Levin. But fun that Michael Malley's getting the writing credit on some of this stuff. All right. They're doing it. Diego and Bill, they're coming for us, Stan. They're starting a podcast.
Yeah, so many good lines here from that podcast alone. Like when Wild Bill says something along the lines of, I'm here to offend as many people as I can with the truth. I thought that was a grade A line. One of my candidates for best line of the episode. But I'm going to say this about podcasting and wrestlers. I have no problems listening to wrestlers tell their shoot stories or their real stories where they pull back the curtain and tell you what really went on behind the scenes. If that stuff goes on in a podcast, fine and well. But if wrestlers use podcasts as platforms for their promos to push storylines forward, I have a problem with it, and here's why. It's so awkward to hear a wrestling promo on a freaking podcast. Like, whenever I listen to a podcast, I always put myself in the state of mind to listen to someone pull the curtain back, to listen to someone tell the actual story of what went down in real life. So if you're going to try to convince me that, no, this is still part of canon, this is still part of the program, but it's in the form of a podcast, I'm going to tune out. I'm going to switch to something else because that's not what I listen to podcasts for.
Yeah, I do wonder, like, I don't know how many, like, I was watching SummerSlam last week. Corey Graves talks a lot about his podcast, and I have not checked it out. And I presume that is breaking kayfabe. I guess a wrestling term. I think we've mentioned it on before, but kayfabe, the idea that wrestling, everything that you're seeing is legitimate, sort of the art of that. And so to break kayfabe means you like are letting people in on that. Secret either accidentally or on purpose. I agree with you. I feel like it's so awkward, the like in character podcast. I feel like if this is a promotional tactic for Duffy, and the thing is although it's interesting, like, is Diego I guess he doesn't have to wear his mask, but he's on the podcast, but is he playing the character that he plays? I can't remember his wrestling gimmick name, but anyway, I think it's fine as long as it's like all in character. But in real life, I'm not taking the time out of my day to listen to what is essentially promotional material for a show.
So I've actually done it, like, in the very early days of my wrestling podcast back in 2014, back when the Philippine wrestling scene was a baby. We actually had the local wrestlers come on our podcast and cut actual promos or cut interviews with one another when they're in character. And it was awkward as hell. So to have actually recorded that myself and then to have listened to that cringy stuff and to see it again on TV, I was like, come on, guys, let's not do this. And you mentioned After the Bell, right? Corey Graves' podcast with WWE. Yeah. They actually do a pretty good job of blurring the lines there. Okay. So they kind of tip their hand a bit, but also try to maintain a sense of kayfabe by going wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like, if you know, you know. But then they don't go all out in saying in calling people by their real names or by actually letting you fully in and saying that this person, while he's my on-screen rival, we're actually really good friends in real life. Like, they don't go out of the way to say that stuff. But they do acknowledge some things in reality.
Okay. All right. All right. We're going to find out that Jack, as he has gotten his mom's phone to find Ace's device, he is going to head out of town, thus leaving Willie in charge of the whole show. Stan, what'd you make of this? Willie's in
girl
charge.
Power. Girl power.
I loved it.
I thought that she was itching to actually get a piece of that part of the action, and she may not show it, but I think Willie's got the chops to actually be in that seat.
Yeah, I thought this was really fun, and I thought the dynamic of her of what's going to come in terms of how much there's a little bit of like pushback on Willie being in charge, subconscious or not, I thought was really interesting, a fun dynamic for this episode to get to play out. We saw last week that she sort of coaches Crystal pretty well in terms of getting her to do what she needs to do to help the Duffy Wrestling League. So I thought this was effectively done.
Yeah. I also loved the scene of Crystal and Willie tossing ideas on one another. It kind of builds on their budding mentor-mentee relationship. The way that Willie's writing the script, at first she's like, "Ah, crap, I have to be the one writing this." But then she kind of seems excited to actually be writing the script. It's like she's had these ideas forever, or has been in the wrestling business forever, which she has, right? So she's finally getting to throw those ideas on a sheet of paper. And Crystal, being the lifelong fan herself, also knows the right things to say, especially as the babyface character she's trying to portray.
Yeah, I do love Debbie being pretty stoked for Billy too. It's great. All right. Before I do love this too. One of Crystal's ideas to make Bobby the roving reporter, and Willie goes, "Oh my God, he's so boring. He's perfect." the idea being that I feel like this is a thing that has ebbed and flowed throughout the history of professional wrestling. My favorite backstage announcer of all time is one Mean Gene Okerlund, who has an amazing voice, and he can be funny and witty, but for the most part, I think that there's this idea that you want your interviewer to be sort of bland so that your wrestler stands out, right? And I think that that has Absolutely. Changed a little bit over time, but a pretty common tactic is be a sheet of paper so that the color is all on Macho Man Randy Savage or whoever, you know.
So in recent days, the role of the backstage interviewer has kind of evolved to the point where they're kind of the voice of the audience now. Whereas in the days of Mean Gene, he was basically the straight man or the actual reporter, right? These days, people like Renee Paquette on AEW, or my favorite right now, Mackenzie Mitchell on NXT, they actually have a little bit of sass now to the way that they react to wrestlers. Like, if you notice Mackenzie Mitchell on NXT, the way that she'd react to someone absurd, like Big Body Javi, whenever he says, "Oh, buy my Christmas record, Big Body Javi sings Merry Christmas," or whatever, she actually gives him the stink face and is like, "I'm going to call you out on your BS, buddy." So I kind of like how that role has evolved, but I guess the DWL is still a couple of steps behind in terms of modern wrestling, so they're still in that whole bland archetype.
But Mean Gene, some of my favorite Mean Gene moments are him absolutely guffawing at the bad guy, being like, "I'm gonna poke his eye out," and Mean Gene being like, "You can't do that." The actual audacity of Mean Gene to kind of be the voice of reason sometimes, when it's the bad guy, or his relationship with Hulk Hogan was always he'd almost get bought into Hulk Hogan, right? As he is That's the right. superhero, he is the guy. He does have huge, biceps,
24-inch pythons and all that.
I think that there is this idea that it's bland, but I think there always has been a little bit of history of the more entertaining interviewer, but alas, we get a little
not
bit
Bobby.
More yeah sorry yeah we get a not Bobby yeah we get a little is he gonna be called Bob he's Bobby Pinch he'd be like Bobby Mike Bobby Interview. He'll have to change his name. We get a little bit more Willie, everybody sort of coming in, giving their ideas about the show, because Jack's not there. And then we'll get this combo with Tom and Jack. And I don't know. I don't know what this is. I kind of feel for Jack. He did think that the school had lifted the suspension. So he tells Tom, you're going to go back to school, buddy. And he's like, "Oh, great. Mom said actually they hadn't made a decision yet." Am I misreading this? Is there more to... Is there something sneaky that Stacy is doing here, or is this the school actually didn't rethought about it, isn't going to let Tom go back to school? Is this only to set up a little bit of Dad said I could do this, and you have to play mean mom between Jack and Stacy?
I'm glad you actually brought that up, because it wasn't clear to me whether the school had cleared Thomas or not. But the way that they set it up led me to believe and led me to read it as Stacy still hasn't sent Thomas back to school so that Jack couldn't have any contact with him. Because we find out later in the episode that Stacy apologizes for keeping Thomas away from Jack, right? So
right.
I figured that in her, point of view of trying to punish Jack, "I'm going to keep Thomas away from you, and that includes not letting him go to school where you can have access to him."
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It's a little confusing in my end. While Bill's influence of all the things that the DWL needs will continue, as Eddie Earl is going to provide a big old TV monitor for the Duffy Dome. Exciting.
Much needed.
Yeah.
Much needed. I've been part of promotions that didn't have a TV like that, or a video wall, as Big Jim points out later on. And the video wall does make a hell of a difference, especially in this day and age where you kind of need that multifaceted presentation to your shows.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I've been to shows, you know, it limits everything you can do to be in the ring instead of stuff that you could film beforehand or whatever. Sometimes companies try this and it's really bad. Anyway, I've definitely been in a place where I'm like, I cannot hear what they're trying to put on the TV at the moment, but seems like a nice TV that Eddie Earle has provided. And this is just going to continue as everybody's like talking about playing, you know, let's play Mario Kart on this thing. Willie's annoyed that nobody's really following her lead to get back to work.
Yeah, and she puts Wild Bill in charge, which I think was a great call. And it continues to show Wild Bill's evolution as the locker room leader, as the veteran in the house that people should be listening to. And I like that he's actually putting his big boy pants on and being that leader for everyone else, while also calling out Big Jim, who suddenly become the know-it-all of the roster. Like, I really enjoyed Big Jim's little bit of character work here, where he just corrects everybody every single opportunity he gets. Like, he had 4 chances to do that this week.
Yeah. What do you make of, Bobby is going to chat with Diego, and he isn't sure whether Crystal kissing him means anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I can see that in the moment of her, like, you know, she wins the belt. Is this, was this just like a thing that happened rather, you know, in a moment of jubilation rather than about wrestling rather than about Bobby. I don't know. I don't know if the writing here is super strong on the Bobby and Crystal will they, won't they? They've literally gone on a date, right?
Yeah, they have. Crystal hangs out in Bobby's trailer, right? So, like, as far as I'm concerned, they've been a couple since season 1, but apparently Bobby doesn't seem to think that way. He's wondering if he's misreading the signs, which I guess is their way of portraying Bobby as this progressive man who doesn't automatically assume that just because she's nice to me, she's into me, right? But the way that he communicates this with Diego comes across as 2 high school kids in grown men's bodies.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it was particularly strong, but that's okay. It doesn't all have to be
fine. It was an attempt.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't know. I don't know if they know what to do with, like, you know, this is a pretty classic, like, will they, won't they thing. And obviously by the end of the episode, they definitely seemingly are together. But I feel like once, like, they lost Ace out of this thing and the potential for Ace to be in the equation here relating to Crystal and Bobby, I feel like, I wonder if they worried that they went a little bit too fast, just like putting them together. And they've made Bobby to be such a nice guy. And Crystal, I feel like, same, that, like, what tension can there be between these two people other than, like, maybe I wasn't sure if your kiss was real or not. So I don't know. Yeah.
It was them probably just trying to create more tension for the sake of it. But the way that the story's been rolling along, I don't think it's quite necessary in the first place, just because there's so much going on already with Crystal and her tension towards the DWL. And as we'll see later, her spot on the card yet again. And then Bobby probably trying to deal with how nice and how naive he can be in such a cutthroat business like wrestling, which hasn't really been fully fleshed out yet, other than the fact that Ace broke his leg in season 1.
Yeah, true.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on.
It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, we're going to get Rooster listening to the podcast with his dad, the new Diego and Bill's podcast. He's going to call Charlie and let him in on that they're dissing him as while Bill tells the story of him clotheslining Charlie Gully.
Yeah. I don't know what the wrestling scene or the wrestling podcasting scene is like in Canada, Grace, but here in the Philippines, something like that has actually happened.
Oh,
where
wow.
People get on a podcast, they talk, they dish behind the scenes info. It's actually real life stuff, whereas Wild Bill's podcast, right, was him kind of being in character. And then someone from a competing promotion would listen and they would have the exact same reaction: to call the boss that they're loyal to and then to plan an ambush or an attack. I know this from firsthand experience because I've been on the receiving end of this stuff. So
wow.
It's pretty weird how people can get so tightly wound and riled up because of a freaking podcast.
Yeah, I don't know. This is why they should all be out. I mean, what's worse? What's maybe you do want them to be in kayfabe so that like it's like, hey, I wasn't actually talking about you. I was in kayfabe, man.
No, I prefer it real. I prefer it to be something real that's being called out, because if you come after me after that stuff's been put on a podcast, that means you're guilty.
True. All right, we get a quick scene with Stacy and Tom. Tom's going to confess to that he really misses his dad. And I think last week I said it was her sister. I think it's just a friend's house they're staying at.
Yes. They are just at a friend's house.
Yeah.
I want to point out how I loved this scene between Stacy and Thomas, because it was a mirror from Jack and his mom's scene from earlier in the episode,
right.
Whereas Jack's mom, Carol, would treat him with corporal punishment and then would turn right back around and quote a Bible verse and then would say that you've become a better man today because of, because you got spanked. She basically implies that, right?
Right.
In contrast to that, Stacy tells Thomas why his comments upset her, but then she addresses it so lovingly, where she makes him understand the place of hurt she's coming from. And then Thomas is consistently written as such a sensitive character, where he speaks much more mature than his age would tell you, right?
Yeah.
Like, he goes, I'm sorry, mommy. I didn't mean to be mean. I'm just sad because I miss daddy. Like, I don't think kids will process their trauma that quickly, but yeah, give them credit, I guess, for writing Thomas to just state it out so plainly.
Yeah, is he like the most emotionally stable speed?
Person in the entire show.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, true. All right, more writing session. Willie's staying up late, and this time she's doing it with Wild Bill. They're collaborating on ideas. They're having a good sesh. Lots of light bulb moments here. Unfortunately, it's going to get a little bit awkward when Willie's husband is going to call, and Bill's going to kind of weasel his way into the sort of FaceTime phone call, which I don't know that Willie loved, and I don't know that Willie's husband loved it either, considering these two, I think, have a history together.
Yeah, I mean, the moment that I saw Willie and Wild Bill in the office at night, I was already thinking if we were seeing some Bring Back the Flame type of stuff going on here. So I think they're telegraphing it. And if they are, I don't necessarily want to see it happen, because I kind of like the idea of Willie being this grizzled vet who's got a life away from wrestling through Ted and their daughter.
Yeah. This to me, like this is like the antithesis of Crystal and Bobby, for me, like yes, this is interesting yes. writing that like they have a past, they really didn't work out. They might not even be good for each other. But we've definitely had moments, the way that like Willie talks about the woman from the state fair when she calls Bill to make sure that he gets the check. I think like it's really compelling. I think that, what I really love is stories where you can kind of see yourself being on anybody's side here in terms of in particular, I think all of them. So kind of like, with Willie and her husband, right? Like, yeah, Jack put her kind of in a spot where she's staying up late. That's the first time she ever did. So she's staying late. It looks like he like did all the dishes and everything, but he's also calling to check in and see how it's going. Then like Bill shows up and like, on one hand, like you could say, that's so awkward of Bill to be like, hey, buddy, like I'm here. But also at the same time, like, is that maybe not better than like finding out later that like she's been staying up late with like, I don't know. There's just like ways in which I think like all of it is like compelling and interesting and complex and everybody's going to feel weird about it in a way that I really like from my dramatic television.
No, that's a great point. I actually didn't consider that. I thought it was a great observation that Wild Bill also kind of did something good here by announcing his presence. Otherwise, it could have been more awkward for Willie and Ted down the road had he found out that Wild Bill was there late at night in the office with Willie and no one else.
And as far as we can see at this moment, they're literally doing nothing but talking about wrestling, which is actually most of the reasons I stay up late too, is talking about wrestling, playing video games, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. All right. We're going to get to Jack's going to find Ace. I thought the writing here, some of it's a little cheesy, but I kind of love it. Like he's like, how'd you find me? He's like, you know, mom has find my phone on the app. He's like, mom is like, following me? It's like, no, you just share your location, dude. And then he's like, I'm gonna find Bill Gates when I go to hell. I'm gonna punch him. And Jack's like, I don't think Bill Gates is in hell. So like, I don't know. It's like I thought it was very funny and light. And like, I feel like this is a thing that they're both kind of doing. Ace is certainly more upset, I think, at this moment. Jack's coming. Yeah, he doesn't want to be confrontational. But this is the thing I do. I use humor a lot to like try to diffuse a potential situation of conflict all the time. So I kind of like that. Like, yeah, the first thing they're talking about, it's like, it's very silly.
Yeah. I love the writing here. We've said this the past couple of weeks, right? That the writing in Heels is actually top-notch, particularly with the dialogue. And we see it here how it's a very serious matter. It's really the complex relationship of two brothers and how one brother has mistreated the other. But the moments of levity that they're able to weave into the dialogue is so masterfully crafted, and I appreciate the writing for that. But I also love how downplayed Jack's anger is. Like, you can tell he's still really upset with Ace, but some of the things he's saying looks like he actually went to a therapist, or he's parroting whatever the therapist told him to say. Things like, I'm sorry for the way that I've treated you and how that's affected my relationship with my family. Like, it's such a very well-adjusted thing to say. And you couple that with the downstated anger that Jack is displaying in his conversation with Ace. And it just makes you appreciate how layered the performance is from Stephen Amell.
I mean, I think what I really love too is, I think in a typical TV show, like Jack is, I think Jack is supposed to be the smarter of the two. And I feel like he's trying this technique and Ace is having literally none of it after the like Steve Jobs thing. He's going to be like, man, I thought I'd have you come home. And he's like, how about you F off? And he's like, I'm sorry, and Ace is throwing everything back. Like, he's like, I really like that. Like, Ace really puts up this like stone wall of like, I'm not going to talk to you. And Jack, the brother, they're all a little bit stubborn the way he is. He's like, can I like sit down? I'm just like, let's get real. And like, so I really love this whole scene from like the opening interaction to like Jack not being able to penetrate Ace's force field to finally sitting down. And also it takes him admitting like, hey, like, I thought you were going to go and get to do this thing that I was never going to be able to do. And I also thought it was going to screw us over. And like, that's what he needs to apologize for. The fact that he, I really thought it was in the previously on, we get Wild Bill, the scene of like him like, yeah, I'm down to scout Ace or whatever. It's like, oh, interesting. And I wasn't really sure why it was in there. And it's not really until I'm thinking about it now that this scene happens where Jack's going to say like, dude, I thought you were going to get up and be gone. And like, I kind of needed you, you know, and it was selfish of me, but like, I was scared. I really love this scene.
And then to add to that, Jack also opens up to Ace about how Tom's suicide has affected him, like, yeah, more than he cares to admit. And, you know, we mentioned earlier on in this episode about how Heels tends to be a dark show and they really lean into these grisly images. And then Jack paints a very, very dark picture here where he says, "Spade men aren't supposed to survive. We're supposed to come home and blow our heads off our front porch and let our sons come home and clean us up." And even Ace is like revolted by it, right? He's so repulsed. He's like, "God, that's really effed up." So, you know, I guess it's Jack's way of communicating to Ace how messed up he's been in the year or so since King Spade had passed away. And Ace, for his part, acknowledges it, but also acts like a child with the way that he reacts. Like, his head is too far up his own butt in the sense that now he thinks he's 100% evil. Like, he's the plague and he should get away from everybody, which is also not the response that I believe Jack was looking for.
No, he want. I mean, I do like, you know, going back to the letter that he gets from his dad, Jack does, that says, "Take care of Ace." And he's saying, like, "My brother's in a motel in Mississippi. So clearly I'm not doing something right, you know." But Ace can't think of himself, you know, highly enough at all. You know, there's so we get a scene. We get Stacy, who starts praying, which I think I don't know what to make of that, really, other than that. I imagine that's something in the future we potentially might see more of. So then we get a scene outside where the two of them are going to talk. And the one thing that I really do wish we were getting more of in Heels, and this is a thing that, for me, when I talk about taking wrestling seriously, it's not just that, like, yeah, there's people who do it or whatever. But for me, some of the literal best nights of my life have been going and watching pro wrestling or watching it on TV with friends or whatever. The euphoria that wrestling has been able to give me is like a thing that is like unmatched in my life. I think it's one of the greatest forms of entertainment. It's so unique and compelling and interesting and complex and etc. And I kind of wish the show was willing to like say that. And like the thing that I think is a little bit missing between like the Ace and Jack stuff is like, it's not just that Jack wants him to come back. It's that like they could, you know, they could make some of the best stuff. They could make such entertaining wrestling if they were to get on the same page and come back together. I know that's like, you know, the space we're kind of in right now is that like Ace doesn't want to, but I kind of wish, like, you know, in terms of like how much of a sad, like how sad Jack has been and how things are going well in his life, like wrestling is the one thing that's been going well, although arguably in the ring, has it actually been going well? Like the last time he got on the ring was, I guess the match with Crystal went well, yeah, but no acknowledgement that like, look what we did. Like, I know you weren't there, but if you come back, you can be part of it. Like Crystal won the title. Everybody was like, you know, euphoric, you know, it's a little thing, but I think, I wish there was a little bit more of like, why do they all wrestle? Why do you do it? If not to like, to be good at it and to put on a good show and be entertaining, you know?
So that's another great point I want to build on, because they've kind of alluded to it in previous episodes, both in season one and season two, where they come back and then everyone's on a high and everyone is cheering and whooping and high-fiving one another because they're like, yeah, that was a hell of a show. Like, we saw that in the flashback, right? Like, after Jack and Ace's very first match during the King Spade Memorial Show. And that's something I've seen and been a part of in real life. Like, we put on a show at our local indie and everybody's on a high. Like, you know, we forget about the botched spots or the mistakes in the ring. We forget about the injuries even. We forget that the company's struggling to pay its bills, which we've also experienced in real life. All we care about is that high. And you take that high away, and suddenly wrestling becomes this very, very dark thing, which, yeah, I've experienced during the height of the COVID pandemic. Like,
yeah,
for all of the highs that wrestling has given me as a person, as a performer, when you take that away and you realize all the baggage that comes with it, it gets super dark. And when we weren't able to put on shows at the height of the COVID pandemic, we realized how taxing it was physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, all of that stuff. And that brings me to Ace acknowledging in that earlier conversation in the motel room that he's going through what a washed up athlete is going through, especially when you have no backup plan or no exit plan. Like, outside of your athletic achievements, outside of the high from wrestling, you're nothing, right? And that's such an existential thing that, yeah, I'm glad Ace was able to acknowledge in that scene.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that they're nailing the really dark aspects of wrestling. I think. I mean, there's obviously more stuff that they could be doing. There's wrestling.
Yeah,
can be. It's taxing on your body. You know, a lot of wrestlers have addiction issues. A lot of wrestlers have died. Have died young. Although Tom is not old. Their dad. I do think sometimes it's not quite hitting the why would I watch a thing that gives all of these, does all this bad stuff to the people who have to do it. You know, I think they get close with Crystal. I think Willie and Bill and Crystal coming up with ideas and stuff is really good. And it's fun. In this combo, I'm like, I don't know. Maybe I just want the argument that Jack will give for Ace to come back. What I do like about this scene is that Ace is not going to come back. I actually think that's interesting. That's I think most shows would be like the brother goes and gets him and he comes back and he's like, I don't know where I'm gonna go, but I'm not gonna go back to Duffy for the time being. So he gives him the wad of cash and he leaves. I think that's an interesting story choice to not immediately just have Ace come back.
I think it was a good choice in the sense that Ace had to have to come or had to come to that realization on his own.
Yeah.
And he had to take that step of going away, then realizing, wait a second, I have unfinished business, and then making that decision for himself. And it shows a bit of growth, I guess, on Ace's part. And even though it's not something Jack would have wanted, that choice of stepping away for however long he was gone was something Ace needed to do. Kind of like how, as he references, LeBron had to go away from Cleveland and take his talents to South Beach.
Yeah, that's right. So we get this scene where they're all training, and it's Diego who's tossing Crystal over the top rope. And Willie's going to come in and ask, why is Diego doing it when I have booked for it to be the dad to do this? I do like the scene earlier when they're talking about how to make the dad a bad guy. And she's like, he's a jerk. Yeah. He's like, no, I'm just writing the story, but she's upset that they would change the plan, that they have this idea that maybe would be better. And she says, you would never do this to Jack. So why are you doing it to me? I thought this was compelling.
Yeah. I think, It also plays on the gender dynamics with regard to having a female promoter in the scene, which Willie was playing here. And then it also cuts away to the news bits that they're seeing on the video wall of these NFL players physically assaulting their female partners and how that leads to their decisions towards intergender wrestling. It's very dynamic the way it all plays out, even though it wasn't exactly the smoothest transition between both things.
Yeah, so they cut to Debbie comes in, she's going to turn on the new TV. They absolutely did not need to film the scenes of fake husbands beating up their fake wives. I did not like it. I don't think many TV channels would even air that on their news programming, so I didn't even find it realistic. I really didn't like it. You know, I go back and forth on this. I do feel like, it's interesting. I do, the more I watch this show, the more, Stan, you've been like, this is what it, this is a reflection of indie wrestling. Intergender wrestling is pretty common in pretty much every wrestling promotion attend. I know that WWE does not do it. AEW does it a little bit, but not a whole ton. But indie wrestling, it's really, really common. It's also not uncommon for there to be a woman's match and a woman's title or something like that. So I don't know if I love this story. So Debbie's going to come in and they're going to have to basically just going to, Willie's going to go to Jack and say, we need a women's division, instead of having Crystal fight all the other men. So I don't know if I love it, but whatever. I don't know.
Can we stop down and just flesh out intergender wrestling a bit here?
Yeah,
for the
sure.
Wrestling fans. Because I understand the point of view from the PR side where it's not a good look to have as part of your entertainment, a man beating up on a woman, right? Never a good look. Sure.
Right.
That being said, wrestling has had a long history of intergender wrestling. And you're right. It's not something we see in WWE anymore, but it's certainly been a part of WWE's history especially when we had the heyday of China. Right, ninth wonder of the world. She was this really huge star back in the Attitude Era, a female wrestler who would have matches with men, and she held men's championships. Right, she was in the men's Royal Rumble. So it's something we've seen. And if you go down the scale to independent wrestling, intergender wrestling is even more common for a couple of reasons. One, there are some promotions that just don't have enough women on the roster. And it's a problem that Willie actually brings up in the episode where she says that Crystal can't run through the entire roster. She just can't. It's just not viable. It's not sustainable. You destroy the entire roster just because there's no one left for her to face, right? And she's supposed to be this compelling underdog hero type of character. Second, sometimes the story just really calls for it. Like, promoters work with what they've got. And if they've got a roster of that includes a very, very good women's wrestler and a very good man's wrestler, and they're both really over or really popular with the crowd, sometimes the story will just call for them to be put together in a match, and they have to write that story and write that match. And they just really have no choice but to be in an intergender match. It just really happens. That's just the way it is. And the reason it's okay is because both the male wrestler and the female wrestler head into the match and give consent to one another to play their part in this act of entertainment. And that's one of the biggest pieces here that a lot of people seem to conveniently forget when they try to criticize intergender wrestling and brand it as glorified domestic abuse or glorified domestic violence. In the context of professional wrestling, you come in and you actually give consent to one another. Wrestling is a business built on trust. And both dance partners, so to speak, come in with that sense of trust in one another, that they will take care of each other, and that the number one priority is still putting on a show while taking care of each other and making it look as convincing of a fight as possible.
Yeah, and I also think that wrestling doesn't often... I mean, the whole thing is everybody fighting. So the way it is perceived, like when you actually watch it, like, it, you know, every once in a while, I'm like, oh my God, that looked like it actually hurt. You know, it's so funny being a wrestling fan of like, I want it to look like it hurt, but I don't want it to actually hurt the people, even though I know like everything probably must hurt. Like a body slam hurts. Doesn't always like in my like wrestling, watching wrestling brain for 30 years, always like looks like it hurts in the same way that like, you know, something else might. But I don't know. It's all, you know, there's, you know, the idea too that like everybody thinks it's real. I have a friend named Patrick Reed. I know him from online. He's a referee, a British referee. And he has written a book that I don't think it's not out, but I've got to hear him talk about it a few times. And it's about kayfabe, the history of kayfabe. And he always says, like, basically, anytime someone tells you, like, this is when wrestling started to be perceived as being fake, you probably have to add like 30 years like back in time for it. Like, that's what I, and so like the point being that like, yeah, as a kid, you might watch it and like think it's real. Eventually the illusion of that will be broken. But like, if you go to a wrestling show, you know, it's mostly adults and everybody knows the deal. Everybody knows that this is choreographed wrestling. We're watching an art form, sports entertainment. I know not everybody loves that term, but that's to a degree what it is. And so having intergendered wrestling, not only, I know that like they're agreeing to do it. I don't think like the image of it, you know, there's a way to make it distasteful. I don't think that that's what wrestling companies are doing. And also at the same time, you can tell some pretty awesome stories with intergender wrestling. Some of the stuff I've seen on independent wrestling scenes or, you know, in the bigger companies too. Crystal getting to like beat up all these men is like a really empowering, so, you know, being the baddest B in the DWL, you know? So
absolutely. To add to that, just like one last layer for the whole intergender wrestling thing, right? Like if people come down on it and say that it's such an inappropriate form of entertainment, then what makes a scene in a movie or a TV show where you have a male bad guy harassing a kidnapped woman? Like, why is that okay? Like, you go back to Taken, for example, the Liam Neeson franchise, right? Where Liam Neeson's daughter is being assaulted there by this human trafficker. Why is that acceptable to see on screen? Whereas when you see live wrestling, you're suddenly up in arms and you're picketing, right? They're both forms of entertainment. One just happens to be presented to you live right there in your face, mere feet away from you.
Right. And then also the other thing is that like, there is so much wrestling out there that like you can find whatever you like pretty much. And if there's a company that has intergender wrestling and you don't like it, you know, it doesn't mean that it's not a legitimate art form. You can go watch something else. I am not a fan of like, I never was of like ECW, like, you know, swearing, profanity, like the heightened stuff, like deathmatch wrestling has never been my thing. I'm not like saying like, you know, it's not its own art form. I'm just going to not watch it. I'll go watch something else. You know? So, yeah. All right. We do get Crystal and Bobby confirmation that they're a thing. Crystal's going to kiss Bobby. She initially teases him a little bit and say, no, yeah, it wasn't.
I loved it. Yeah. I loved it. Yeah. Like, I would love to be in that situation as the Bobby pin there, but they DTR, they define the relationship. Good for them. Yeah.
It's good. All right. So Jack's going to return, going to let Willie know that Ace is not coming back. And this is where Willie is going to propose the women's division. And he, again, I think that this show, he's a jerk here, I think, to be like, I don't want to talk about it. Is he wrong? Like, I don't know. Like, you know, to express, like, I'm not in the mood to talk about this thing at the moment. But he does ask. He's like, how are things here? And then she's like, here are all the problems. He's like, I don't want to talk about any of this stuff right now.
Yeah, what
I don't
a
know.
Jerk, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Jack's got issues. But I love this in the sense that it sets up the El Dorado appearance. And El Dorado's played by the great AJ Mendez, former WWE Divas champion. So I'm right. and CM Punk's real life wife. So I'm super excited to see El Dorado show up. And I like how they already lay the groundwork here.
El Dorado is a fantastic wrestling name.
That's have you so seen good. The shirt? They actually have an El Dorado shirt. Which
pro
I want.
Tees. You told me that they were selling heels merch on Pro
They've
Wrestling
Tees.
They've
got shirts for everyone now.
Yeah, they're all in there. I see I could get a Bobby Pin shirt if I wanted. All right. Well, this really, I feel like the, like, I don't want to talk about it. Willie exit stage left really sets up Charlie Gulley standing in the ring, taunting our boy Jack. Jack is not having it. I feel like, you know what I really love is I feel like the way that Charlie continues to push what he wants out of this conversation, I feel like, and the way that Jack responds is very Ace. The scene earlier, I think you talked about the mom scenes, I thought were really good. I feel like you can see that these are Spade brothers here, as like Jack repeatedly is like, I'm not doing business with you. You can leave. Leave the key. I'm leaving. Like, you have to leave. And then it's not until Charlie. So the thing being presented, which I'd love to have you explain this a little bit, is some cross promotion between Duffy and Dystopia based on Jack having arrived and punching Charlie. It's their most viewed YouTube video. Charlie thinks they can make money off of this. Jack is obviously going to say no until he's presented with a potential lawsuit for having punched Charlie, which, again, I said this last week, I think one of the things I've really enjoyed from the show is when people do things, it does feel like almost everything has consequences. Yes. And so I do like that this is not like, because I think it's a little silly to think that somebody would go to another wrestling promotion and attack the promoter. So the fact that like it actually does come back around as an actual issue for Jack, I think is really good writing. But do you want to talk a little bit about like what Charlie is actually proposing here?
Yeah, sure. But first, the meta layer of the showrunner actually saying in character that every action has a consequence just popped me, right?
That's good.
All right, so cross promotion. So a cross promotion, as Charlie Gulley sort of explains in the dialogue here, is when two companies come together and put on a joint show. What this means is you'll get crossover matches from promotion A, for example, the Duffy Wrestling League, and promotion B, Dystopia. So normally it's really presented as kind of like your DC versus Marvel showdown, where it's like dream match after dream match, or these are matchups that you never would have imagined on the same card just because these people were part of rival promotions, like WWE versus WCW. Like before Vince McMahon bought WCW, in the year 2001, people never thought that they would see the top stars of WWE go up against the top stars of WCW in their prime, right? Now, that's all fine and well, and Charlie Gulley makes up a great point that people know that there's beef between these two promotions, so to see us go head-to-head in a super show, it's going to bring a lot of money. All we have to do is to pick it up. That's a great point. Kind of agree with it, but here's where the problem is when it comes to cross promotions in the real world of professional wrestling, as absurd as that sounds. Cross promotion can go wrong when you have two companies that have legit beef with one another. And what we're seeing between Dystopia and the Duffy Wrestling League is that these two promotions just want to literally hurt one another from the way that they're doing business, right? That's not good, because I don't know how they can enter a locker room where they have this dread and this anxiety that I might actually get hurt for real when I step out there to perform tonight. It's something I've seen in the wrestling business. And here in the Philippine wrestling scene, there are actually two promotions that are sort of kind of rivals. I've been part of both of them. And I know that there is a legit rivalry and legit beef. And that's why the Philippine wrestling fans should know that these two promotions will never go head-to-head in a super show just because the companies can't trust one another, that they won't do what Ace did and legitimately hurt another wrestler in the ring and severely injure them. And we go back to professional wrestling being a business built on trust, where you literally put your livelihood, your body, your career in the hands of another partner or another wrestler, rather. It becomes very complicated. That's why the cross-promoting thing, while it's such a dream concept that a lot of wrestling fans want to see between two companies, when there's legitimate beef there between the companies, the promoters, the actual wrestlers inside, it can get pretty dangerous. So going back to what you said earlier, Grace, about how both characters in a particular dialogue are relatable, I get where Charlie Gully's coming from, but I also get why Jack doesn't want to do business with Dystopia.
I think it's really fun because this is a pretty different angle than what I think is probably the biggest reason why, in my opinion, why this is a bad idea and why it won't work is because professional wrestling is a storytelling industry. And when you run your own company, you can have, you know, at the end of the day, whatever story you want to tell, which ultimately, typically, usually it ends up being some wrestler who's a babyface, a good person on the good side of things, overcoming the bad person. Typically is the story that ultimately gets told. That doesn't mean every match ends with the good guy winning, because sometimes you want the bad guy to win eventually when they lose, how satisfying will it be? Roman Reigns is a bad guy in wrestling who's had one of the longest reigns in a very long time. He's multiple years. The reason he keeps winning is not just like he's really good at his job, so he, you know, wins, but also, you know, the idea being that when somebody beats him, what a big deal that will be. The fact that he keeps pulling out victories. So in a cross promotion thing where, yeah, you can say that we're both going to enter at 50-50, but ultimately, you know, the last match of the last, you know, cross promotion event has to have somebody winning. It would probably be pretty dissatisfying to not have a winner. And so that either has to be some, you know, that either has to be Rooster or that has to be Jack if that's the match.
Right.
And so how do you decide who gets to do that? How do you not come out of it if you're the company that like ultimately loses in quotations the story, looking worse than you did before? So I think that's the biggest danger, and I imagine where there'll be a ton of the conflict here in terms of what does this actually look like for each company? What are they actually going to get out of it? Are they both going to look better coming out of it than they've come into it? So I do think an interesting thing to put on the, you know, into the season in episode 3. I think Michael Malley as this in this role of Charlie Gully is very fun.
Yes,
it's very good. It means we can keep Rooster around. You know, I think this is fun. I think and you can feel it from Jack's point of view. He's stuck. He has to do it, you know. But maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll just get sued.
I love how Charlie Gully just really shoved Jack into a corner here. And I love the little bits of dialogue as well. Like, for example, I really appreciated how Jack told Rooster to F off by addressing him by his real name.
Yeah.
So it shows how personal this has gotten. I loved how Rooster told Jack, don't use the word poach on me like I'm an effing animal. There's like a bit of racial dynamic there, which I thought was really smart. I loved
your Shelly Gully says, or like an egg.
Yes.
Immediately.
right. Yeah. Especially since it's two white promoters, right, who are doing business. Then there's Rooster off to the side. And then my favorite part of the entire exchange is how Charlie and Rooster get into the evolving connotation of F with.
Yeah.
Like, if I F with you in the past, it was bad. But now if I F's with you, we're good. I'd really love that.
This is my, we'll get to it, but we talk about our favorite Stephanie in the episode. This is it for me of the changing F's with. It used to be that being F'd with was a bad thing, but now if you F with something, that's a good thing. I really enjoyed this. Yeah. We are going to... cut to this scene with Ace. He's going to have a bit of a nightmare. He's going to imagine Crystal, and then he's going to imagine his father. I agree with what you said earlier. I feel like unnecessary, you know, for the show to do yep. this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know really what we're adding. Other than that, Ace is still not in a great headspace.
Yep. The less said about it, the better.
Yeah. We're going to be at a party here, a celebration, talking about, I mean, Debbie's just going on a feminist rant, I think, mostly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's got a great point, you know, but there is also a fine line. And again, you got to respect the show for presenting both sides of the argument here. Make of that what you will and take your side. I don't think there's 100% a wrong answer here.
Yeah. Jack will return home and Stacy's in bed. He's going to ask if it's too late to say sorry, and she's going to say no. He's going to apologize for putting DWL first. She's going to say she's sorry too. So yeah, nice moment here at the end.
Yeah, so I guess she admits to keeping Thomas away from Jack, which is not going to win her Best Mom of the Year award. So
yeah. And then surprise, surprise. Ace shows up back at the front door to ask if he can stay at the Spade House.
Yeah. It was a great ending, actually. It really showed the journey of Ace, but in terms of like the days, if this all just happened in the span of like 24, 48 hours, it really does make Ace look like a runaway child. So there's that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because I said I really did like this choice for him like not return with Jack, and then so then ultimately he ends up returning, and you imagine he's got to get looped back into the wrestling stuff, but I don't know, we'll see where we go from here with Ace having moved in with Jack. I mean, I think
also
good
Carol didn't want Ace back. Can we just point out that Carol did not want Ace back, so it really establishes her as not so great of a mom either.
Yeah, that's bad. Yeah, it's no good. Yeah. I think this leaves us in a pretty interesting spot. There's the cross promotion stuff. What are we going to do with Crystal, Ace and Jack? Jack seemingly he's got to figure out how to make he can't just do what he's been doing because he just apologized to Stacy. So he's got to make it work a little bit better, which is interesting because like, you know, dramas are built on conflict. So where's the conflict going to come from? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah.
Shall we get to our favorite lines of the episode?
Yeah, let's do it. Do you have a favorite line from the episode?
So I actually have a bunch of them, but now that we've fleshed it out, the whole evolving connotation of F-with, that's got to take the award for this week.
It's really good. Yeah, it's really clever. It's really good. It's like a thing. It feels like what someone would do in a stand-up routine. You know, I'd hear that of like, you know, used to be, you know. Yeah, it's really good. Okay, I like that one too. I really like I like when Ace is telling Jack to F off at the motel room and Jack says, man, I really thought I would have you. I'd come home. I think that's really good because he just opens the door and he says, come home. And Ace is like, F you, man. And so then they talk a little bit and then Jack says, man, I really thought I was going to get you. I'd come home, I think is a funny line that I feel like I would use. So yeah, I like it. Not that I'm like ever in spats with my brothers at hotel rooms, but
The whole thing about dying and going to hell and then finding Steve Jobs to beat the F out of him, that was also pretty good. Wild Bill had a couple of good lines here, like this is gonna be a bit graphic, but I really enjoyed it when he said God created the sphincter so that, you know, crapping by design would be voluntary.
Keeping up with the he's been poisoned bit. I did like when Willie is saying the dad is going to fight Crystal and is like being like, yeah. So he's like, he's a jerk. And Crystal's like, really? It's like, no, that's a character. You know, I don't know what he's like. I thought that was fun. So yeah, there's a lot. I mean, I do think the writing is good here in the show. It's a compelling show. Fun little show that appears on Stars. We get to talk about each week, Stan.
Yeah, I really appreciate everything that they do. You know, for all of the imperfections, it still brings me a whole lot of entertainment. And just getting to break it down here with you each week is the highlight of my week.
Yeah, same for me. Okay, so we'll be back next week to chat about episode 4, which I believe is called Heavy Heads. I wonder whether Jack doesn't maybe want to write, I think, is maybe something that we could see, that if he hands it over to Willie and Bill, that's how we get a little bit more of them having to hang out a little bit more. Maybe Jack just wants to wrestle. Is that the thing he's good at, rather than running the creative? So heavy is the head that wears the crown, is the old saying, and their father was King Spade. So we shall see. I'm talking lots of other TV here on post show recaps, Foundation, Heartstopper, movies each week, the After Party, Winning Time, and a whole lot more. I'm on socials at High From Grace or at Go For Grace. Make sure subscribed to the post show recaps feed or the binge show feed. This postshowrecaps.com/binge feed for all of our coverage of Heels. Stan, what are you up to and where can people find you?
You can find me on social media everywhere at @StanC. On TikTok, it is StanC Says. I've got a couple of projects that I'm excited to bring out on social media. One of them being my work at the FIBA Basketball World Cup. I'm going to be an MC at the games, and I'm really thrilled to be in this position for the Filipino fans in the Philippines. So I'm going to be posting some content from the arenas when the tournament kicks off on the 25th. That's in about 2 weeks from now. And you can catch our wrestling podcast, the Wrestling Podcast, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Cool.
And as we get out of here, we got to say thank you on behalf of Grace Leader, the baby face to my heel. My name is Stan C, saying be a professional first, because the first word in professional wrestling is professional.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.